For over 10 years, we've been bringing you killer metal music and frank discussions about heavy metal. Wait, who the hell is Frank? You are tuned into MSR Cast, brought to you by Mainstream Resistance. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek and Sean the Metal Pigeon. Keep it metal.
Hi, this is James Avera. I'm going back to old school. MSR Cast? Oh, come on. Yes, we've been around for a long time, and we're not going away. This is James Avera from Hellstar. Support your local scene.
Welcome, everyone, to episode number 210 of MSR Cast, your metal podcast. I am one of your hosts. I am Kerry the Metal Geek, along with
Sean the Metal Pigeon.
What's up, man?
What's up?
You ready to rock out tonight?
I'm ready.
We got some rocking out to do tonight.
Yeah. This is a very eclectic show.
It could be more eclectic if we wanted it to be.
Yeah.
We could really try.
We held back a little bit.
We did hold back a little bit. So, you want to hear a story? You want to hear a little behind-the-scenes action?
Yes.
of the show here? I'm talking to our listeners. We were preparing, as we do most of the time when we're about to record, we'll sit there and watch some of these YouTube videos on the TV at the studio. And this band came on as it was going through the Nuclear Blast YouTube playlist. And this band called Beast in Black. And we... What did you say? What did you say about it?
Well, I thought
you were mad at yourself, right?
I was a little annoyed because, I mean, this is a Nuclear Blast release, came out last year, and we were only just now hearing about it. No one told us about this or, you know, like, gave me a heads up, you know? I didn't get, like, a recommendation on YouTube. I subscribed to the damn record label's YouTube channel, so, yeah, a little annoyed. But better late than never, I guess.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I gotta say, like, I think I'm definitely gonna go and get this record, first of all.
Right.
But the vocalist guy, I can't remember his name, really long Greek name. He has
Papadopoulos.
Papadopoulos.
I don't remember his first name.
He has a voice that kind of reminds me sort of like a Tony Kakko-ish voice, mm-hmm. but the band kind of has that kind of Sabaton thing going on some of those songs.
A little bit. A lot of keyboard heavy.
Right. Yeah.
A lot of keyboard front.
Yeah. And like, but lyrically it reminds me of like Tony Kakko from Sonata Arctica and vocally too.
So a little background on the band as we discuss further, Beast in Black is a Finnish band that was founded in 2015 by guitarist and songwriter Anton Kabanon after he left his former band Battle Beast, who I'll admit I do not like Battle Beast. I think they're overly cheesy in a bad way. But that's just me. I don't have to like everything.
Right.
I love Sabaton, but I don't like Battle Beast.
I'm on the fence with Battle Beast.
Yeah. So like Battle Beast, the band's name is a tribute to the Japanese manga and anime series Berserk.
Which apparently Battle Beast is also.
Yeah, I did not know that. They signed in 2015 with Nuclear Blast, put out the new album November 3rd, 2017, called Berserker. Making fuck like truck Berserker. Come on, you have to think that when you hear it.
I'm just thinking of that scene, yeah.
Speaking of, on a quick tangent, the week before last, I went and saw Jay Muse.
Ah, yeah.
At the Hollywood Improv do his his show. Can't call it a comedy show.
What was that?
I don't know.
It's like a spoken word thing almost?
Spoken word. I can't really say it was a stand-up comedy show. It was more of like what Kevin Smith does. He came out and did some stories. Then did some Q&A stuff at the end.
Hmm.
Definitely not as long-winded as Kevin Smith, but it was fun. I mean, I had a good time.
Yeah. Funny?
He is funny.
Yeah.
I mean...
Different kind of funny, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, Kevin Smith has... Just like comedians do, they have their spiel down. So it's the same thing. If you hear it, you'll hear it at a show. You'll hear it on his podcast. You'll hear it all over the place. Same stuff. He'll like come up with something funny, then you use it a lot. Don't know if Jay Muse is doing that, but I listen to Jay and Tom Bob Get Old sometime, which is his podcast, was you know that they do, and that's fun. But yeah, it was a fun show, and he stayed afterwards and did autographs and pictures with everybody. And he wouldn't let you take a picture. He was taking all the selfies himself. He was like, he did like 10 pictures for every person. He was like, click, click, click. So some of them were not in focus.
Right.
Because you're in a like the front of a dart club.
Right.
Whatever. It was still fun. It was definitely worth going to. But back to the metal.
Right.
He did talk – speaking of, he did talk about – somebody asked him why there was a lot of King Diamond and Merciful Fate references in Jane, Tom, Bob – or Clerks 2.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he would always – sing Merciful Fate songs to Kevin Smith to annoy him. So that's how it got into the... And then he got into the I like Merciful Fate more than King Diamond type of thing. It was a little bit of a...
Right.
I was like, oh, this is a pretty metal moment for here. This is pretty cool.
Yeah.
People in the audience are going, who?
Right, yeah. Who?
King what? It was fun, though. So back to Beast in Black.
Yeah. Interesting band. I don't know. A couple of Greek guys in a Finnish power metal band.
Yeah, the lead singer, Yiannis Papadopoulos. Mm-hmm. Yiannis.
Well, I've never heard him. I've never heard him before.
No, we watched a little video, and the lead guy, Anton, said he found him on a YouTube.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you got a great guy. That's why there's like one Greek guy in this Finnish band.
Well, one of the things when we were watching that one, it was the lyric video where he sing just basically him in front of the microphone.
Yeah.
And it's a very kind of not a power balladish thing, but it's when you read the lyrics alongside it, it's like, okay, this is sort of like a love song type thing and like very mushy lyrics. But I sort of, one of the comments I made was like, I sort of like that approach of like a Celine Dion meets metal type thing of just going for it. Just like,
oh yeah, they're
total abandon.
They're not pulling punches with the lovey dovey stuff.
Which is kind of why I like Sonata Arctica so much, because they're just so unafraid to do that kind of thing.
Sure.
I don't know why Celine Dion has kept coming up so much for me this damn week.
I've
had like recommendations on YouTube. I walked into a grocery store the other day and they were playing the Jim Steinman song she did, the It's All Coming Back to Me.
Okay.
So, you know, and
I watched Deadpool 2 today.
Yeah, and
yeah, she featured a lot in that movie.
Yeah.
Have you seen the music video?
I saw the
right?
music video, which was great. Yeah.
Yeah. That's fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the line in the music video where Deadpool tells her, he's like, tone it down, this is not Titanic.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, oh, it's the worst fucking song ever. It really is.
The Titanic song?
Yes.
Oh, man, I think that's a great song.
No.
Well, no, I mean, like, overplayed, 100%, might be the most overplayed song in the world. But just if you separate the song from that and just look at it as a musical composition, that song, there's a reason why when you're alone and you listen to that song, it sort of affects you. Like, that song's so well written. James Horner and whoever the other guy was, the lyricist who did it, great job.
Well, just
as a musician thing.
We'll
just
agree to disagree here.
I think it's a great song.
I'm not a Celine Dion fan in any kind.
I wouldn't call myself a fan. I just sort of I look at the way the power she has in her voice when she sings that song, and I go, damn, yeah, that's more power in that voice than a lot of metal vocalists have. You know,
she should do a metal album.
No, what should happen is some enterprising power metal bands, perhaps Beast in Black, should do a Celine Dion cover.
I've heard a Celine Dion cover.
Really?
I don't remember who it is, though, but I've heard a metal
Celine. So like a symphonic metal band probably be the most likely suspect.
So I'm going to Google metal Celine Dion.
Uh-oh. Who knows what this will unleash.
Be careful when you Google shit sometimes, people. I got the metal Celine Dion t-shirt. You should get that shirt.
Yeah, that's an ugly t-shirt.
Come on. My heart will go on. Your heart will go on, dude. I don't remember who did it originally. There's a black metal version.
No.
Maybe it was Soul. There's a band called Soul Spill. That's what it was.
Okay. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. All right. But away from that.
Yeah.
You seen any shows recently?
Yeah, I actually did go to a show. The last Saturday I went go see Tribute Night at the Scout Bar.
Tribute Night?
Yeah.
Is that the band name?
No, it was like, you know, like a night of tribute bands. And it was an Iron Maiden tribute called Seventh Son, a Scorpions tribute called Savage Amusement.
Oh, cool.
And a Dio slash Yngwie tribute called Sacred Star. And the Sacred Star and the Seventh Son bands were from San Antonio. They're based in San Antonio, which is lucky for us because they play here a lot. In fact, they just played here last night at Fitzgerald's. They did like a laser show.
Oh, really?
Like a laser Iron Maiden experience.
Oh, that would have been cool.
I got to say, I didn't know what to expect. When I walked in there, the first band was the Dio Yngwie band.
Yngwie. Wing.
And the vocalist, she was spot on Dio.
Oh.
I think Jennifer Espinoza, I think her name is. Jessica Espinoza or something. She was amazing. And just she had the look down, texture
not
down.
Not a hologram, right?
No. And the bassist kind of had that Rudy Sarzo look going, and he was just grooving. And the guitarist, Euro something, the guy looked like Yngwie Malmsteen.
You're just hungry now.
No, his name was really like J-Y-R-O.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and but he had the puffy white shirt, crushed velvet jacket, the leather pants.
Was it purple?
Yeah, it was like a crushed velvet jacket. But dude, that guy could shred. Like, he was an amazingly talented guitarist. Like, if this was in the 80s, that guy would be signed to a major band, you know, touring the world. He had that kind of level of talent. Like, he had the stage moves down, and he was also the guitarist in Seventh Son.
So he was doing double duty.
He was doing double duty. And he was handling the keyboards and the freaking guitars on Seventh Son. And the guy singing for Seventh Son, I wish I could remember his name. I'll figure it out later in the show. He sounded exactly like Bruce Dickinson. I'm not exaggerating.
Really?
Like, they came out and did Moonchild. They came out of the gate with Moonchild. So if they fucked that up, you know, everyone in the crowd would have been very skeptical of the rest of the set. He comes out and nails it. And I look around, and I see everyone's face right there just light up with surprise and delight. Like, holy shit, this guy's nailing this. He not only nailed the notes and got everything right and wasn't off pitch or off key, mm-hmm. he nailed the tenor, the texture of Bruce's voice, like the very definition of it.
Wow.
It was honestly one of the most surreal things. And like later, they played a song that Maiden hasn't played since 86. They played Stranger in a Strange Land. And he said it was one of his favorite songs. And he played it. And I closed my eyes for a second. I thought for like a moment, I'm like, this must be what it was like to see Maiden in 86 on the Somewhere in Time tour. Like, it sounded just that identical to what I imagine it could have been. And they were, I think the newest song they played, they played Brave New World, the actual song. That was the newest cut, but it was mostly just a classic set. But they just did a lot of just, you know, gems and stuff. And it was an amazing thing to see. And I actually had a friend John with me, and afterwards, like, he commented, he's like, I feel like I've seen Maiden now, like in a small club now. Hmm. Like, that was as close as you can possibly get. Like, they were really that fucking good. I was so surprised. It was $10. It was like the best $10 gig I've ever been to. And I can't recommend these guys enough. And I'm so glad they're San Antonio based, which means they're going to be back here often. And I'm going to be seeing these guys again. So
I went to a free show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thursday of last week, I went and saw Faster Pussycat. So I'm going to preface this. Uh-huh. I'm going to say that I've been a fan of that band since like 86, 87. Yeah. Was the first album? 87.
87, yeah.
Been a huge fan of the band. I've never seen them live. Well, not true. So
you're going to bring up that Clash of the Titans tour again?
No, they weren't on that tour.
Oh,
no,
they were.
No. So I did sort of see him, hear him a couple of years ago, a buddy of mine. So the club that they're playing at, a lot of these 80s hair metal bands are playing at, like Vince Neil is coming there, Warrant just played there.
Jeez.
All these washed up 80s band are playing there, and the tickets are free most of the time. Yngwie just played there.
Yeah, Slaughter just played there.
Slaughter, Yngwie just played there.
Oh man, I would have gone to see Yngwie. Shit.
And these tickets are free, man. I saw Iron Maiden there before, and I've seen Hellstar there before.
Yeah.
It's a cool little club. It's on the rooftop of this building. So it's called the Proof Rooftop Bar. And a buddy of mine actually lives midtown Houston. His condo, it's on the 24th floor. And from his balcony, we could sit out there with a cigar and some alcohol and actually hear the band play. And the last time that Faster Pussycat played there that I remember was July 4th, like 2 years ago. And we were there at a party at his house. It was super loud. There was fireworks going off everywhere when they were playing, and I could hear it a little bit. So I was like, you know, next time they play and they come here, I'm going to go see them.
Right.
Nobody else wanted to go. But I'm glad I went. So the opening band was a band called Paradise Kitty from LA. Can you imagine what they were?
Yeah, I can imagine.
It was all female Guns N' Roses tribute.
Yeah.
It was. And they played mostly songs off the first two albums. So Appetite and a little bit of Lies. Mm-hmm. And then they played the song from T2.
You Could Be Mine.
You Could Be Mine. Yeah. They were okay. They weren't bad. The singer sounded really. She didn't really sound like Axl. She wasn't trying to be an Axl thing. But her vocals were amazing. She was really, really good.
Did they go for the look though?
No, not really. Maybe a little bit. Right. They were still going for that 80s rocker chick style, but like the drummer comes up the stage, she has this big ass purse. I'm like, that's weird. But I guess you're not gonna leave your purse hanging around somewhere. Right, yeah. You know what I mean? But they're good. And then Don Jameson was there that night.
Oh, okay.
The comedian.
He's doing like a set?
Yeah, he did a comedy set between the bands. He's on this whole tour, and he was funny. He was, you know, he's a little controversial. And a friend of mine that I ran into there, he's like, yeah, I can't wait for the guy to be off the stage. I'm like, it's not bad, man. It was sort of funny.
He can be funny sometimes.
Yeah. And then Faster Pussycat played, and they played a good long set. All the songs that you would want to hear. You know, they did some like weird. They were in this weird industrial metal phase for a little bit because Tamey Down, the lead singer and the main guy, he was in a band with Trent Reznor. He was in, you know, he's done stuff with Pigface and all this.
He was in a band with Trent Reznor?
Yeah.
What was this band?
Well, he's done stuff with Pigface before.
Huh.
So, which is like an ever, if you don't know who they are, they're a musical conglomerate. It's just all kinds of different people in and out of that band.
But one of the
main guys is Trent Reznor.
Didn't he end up being the guy who owned Metal Sludge?
Wasn't he
like one of the main guys behind it?
I don't know. Was he?
I think so. I think there was something about that. He's an interesting guy. Very unique story to him.
I don't know that. That's a. I'm not sure. He's been in. I'm looking up the band that he's been in. He's been in the Newly Dead. Was it one of his bands? You remember that?
Yeah.
Which is very much in that.
Yeah.
That early 2000s industrial metal style. You know. Pigface, yeah, the band broke up. After the band broke up, he moved to Chicago to work with Pigface. And if you never heard Pigface, do yourself a favor. They were formed by Al Jorgensen. Trent Reznor was originally in the band before Nine Inch Nails blew up, basically. If you ever heard that song Suck, it was originally a Pigface song.
Okay.
But, I mean, he's had everybody from people from NS, from KMFDM, Skinny Puppy, Ogre, Flea's been in the band. All these different people have been in the band. Killing Joke. It's just been this. I mean, I'm looking at the list. It's just like a list of everybody that's been in the band.
Wow.
It's just like this weird musical conglomerate.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been looking forward to seeing Faster Pussycat since the 80s, truthfully. It was fun.
Yeah.
It's weird seeing guys in their 50s doing these older songs, especially some of the lyrical themes that Faster Pussycat talks about.
Yeah.
Like Cat House and I Got Your Number Off the Bathroom Wall type of stuff. It's still fun.
I guess it's weird if you let it be weird, but, you know, other than that, it's just like a celebration of history or of music and stuff, you know?
So, to help celebrate that, let's play a song from Faster Pussycat, talking about being eclectic.
Yeah.
Let's start this off eclectic as hell.
Yeah.
Eclectic AF, as the young kids say. We're going to get into a song called Poison Ivy. It's one of my favorite tracks from their second album called Wake Me When It's Over. And that was, what year was that? That was 19, I'm trying to look it up, 89. Hit number 48 on the chart in the U.S. Yeah. And it's certified gold label or gold album on Elektra Records. I mean,
it's amazing. Back in the day, you could be 48 or 49 and still get gold.
No shit, right?
That's how crazy it was back then.
So the band's only put out 4 albums in their career. 87 was Faster Pussycat, 89, Wake Me When It's Over, 1992 with Whipped, and then they did an album called The Power in the Glory Hole in 2006.
Oh, wow. They went that late, 2006?
Yeah.
That's sort of admirable, though, that they tried.
Yeah.
I know we're about to play the song, but one of the things I think a lot of these bands like of that era,
yeah,
that you kind of have to knock them for is that they didn't ever try to continue doing new music.
Right.
That you kind of realized after a while it really was, for these types of bands, it really was like, it was about the fame and the fortune and the glory, that kind of thing. It really wasn't about the artistry. Because
well, apparently the Faster Pussycat is about the glory hole.
Well, yeah.
It's the power of the
glory. Cue the song.
Kill it, play it. And just to let you know, Tame Me Down is like the only original member still in the band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I figured.
And he was going through that wearing a like a, you know, a rocker cowboy hat because took his hat off. Oh, bald.
Man.
Bald with long hair. But when you get in your 50s, what are you going to do?
Yeah, they can't hold it against him.
Yeah. He's rocking the skullet. It's awesome.
Welcome back, MSRcast 210. Powerwolf, Venom of Venus, from the album The Sacrament of Sin. We missed this album when it came out in July.
We missed it on purpose, or
no?
We missed it purposely.
I honestly just spaced on it being released.
Yeah.
And this is a band I sort of, just because of how big they are now, I kind of have to pay attention, or we should be paying attention to.
Yeah. You know, they have a shtick. They really go for their shtick, but they have good songs, which you can't deny that
they have good songs. But I've yet to hear a good complete record from them, and this one included.
I didn't say album. I said songs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think like what's interesting about this album, though, in the deluxe edition, is they have a bunch of contemporary artists like Epica and. A bunch of other people doing cover versions of Powerwolf songs. It's like the deluxe, like the bonus disc that comes with the deluxe edition.
That's interesting. Like, who's on it?
Like, I know Epica does Sacred and Wild, which is probably the best Powerwolf song. There was a bunch of weird bands. I'm trying to pull up the list here. But just on the album itself, it's this band is so uneven. The single that
Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend.
Demons Are a Girl's Best Friend is the single.
Oh,
the music video track.
Wow,
it's a catchy song, but it's just like it's just something about the lyrical choice that kind of I can't really commit to it completely as a fan. And I know that's their whole shtick, and I get it. And when you see this band in concert and like the footage of them in these festivals in Europe and they have their fans dressed up like them, I get the whole appeal of them. They're so enormously popular over there.
They're so lycanthropic.
Fair, yeah. I just don't... I don't know why, because they sound so similar to Sabaton sometimes, just the keyboard melodies first. You know, they have that kind of thing in common with Sabaton and Orden Ogon.
Yeah.
And I like
I can see that.
I like the songwriting, but just... I think Attila is a great vocalist, honestly. I think that guy is a fantastic singer, and he can deliver it live and everything.
I found it's Epica, Saltatio Mortis, Caliban, Battle Beast, Heaven Shall Burn, Cadaver, Kiss and Dynamite, Mike Petroza, Amarant, and Elivete.
Mila Petroza.
Yeah.
The Amaranth one was very Amaranthy, but the Heaven Shall Burn one was pretty good. I've always had a soft spot for that band, though, actually, a little bit.
They did a cover of Blindguardian.
Yeah.
So, I mean, which isn't bad.
The Elevati cover was pretty good.
So, that's just weird that a band got a bunch of other bands to cover them for...
Yeah, it's strange. They do a
hey,
lot of...
Hey, do you guys want to do a tribute album to us? We'll put it out.
Yeah.
It's a little... what's the word I'm looking for? Egotistical?
But at the same time, it is also an indication of just how big these guys are. And the thing is, they don't ever play in the United States. They have no real presence here. So it's just
Song titles by Resurrection by Erection, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
How could you go wrong?
It's funny because, like, we all have this very endearing attitude towards Sabaton because I've seen this Sabaton.
Yeah.
Sabaton just had their own freaking open air festival. It just finished like a couple of days ago, like 2 days ago. Sabaton open air. That they're a metal. They're a band that can have the chutzpah to put that together and the pull to bring all these people there.
Right.
And you know, obviously, it's not as big as Summer Breeze or something, but it's still a pretty novel accomplishment. The only other band I've known who can do that in that realm is like Blindguardian tried it, but they only did it once. Sabaton's been doing it for 11 or 10 years straight. But
they're Sabaton's a powerhouse of a band that asses off.
They are, but the thing is, what I'm saying is that I would almost put them and Powerwolf on the same footing, like headliner status. Like they're both, I think, headlining Wacken next year.
Mm-hmm. Powerwolf?
Powerwolf and Sabaton's doing their...
Are they big enough to headline Wacken?
I think so, yeah.
Hmm.
And the thing is... Sabaton we know here in the States because they've made inroads. Powerwolf has not done the same level of – they have not done the touring that Sabaton's done in the United States. In fact, I don't think Sabaton or Powerwolf's ever played here.
You know what's weird about the band? It's – they play happy, cheesy power metal stuff, but their imagery, their themes, everything about them is dark.
You would think they sound like Dimmu Borgir if you
right.
saw
it. Right. I mean, they
were
a corpse paint right. and, you know, they're all – They sing about demons.
For God's sake, their lead vocalist's name is
vampires.
Attila.
Right.
Like Attila from Mayhem.
Yeah.
You know?
Or the Hun.
Yeah, well, fair, yeah. Yeah.
I always thought that was weird.
I'm conflicted about Powerwolf because I hear a couple songs like Sacred and Wild, I think was a classic power metal song, I think is, and the Epica cover is really good. And then on this album, Venom of Venus, the song that we just listened to, I like it a lot, and I even like the single, but again, the lyric matter sometimes gets in the way. I had the same problem with their last album when I reviewed it. I was just sort of like, I want to like this band so bad, but I have these stumbling blocks in the way,
yeah.
And that sounds...
I'm right on board with you on that one.
It sounds stupid because for me to say that, but it's just the truth. But, you know, we were just playing Beast in Black, and this band, all their songs are apparently based on the... Japanese manga Berserker or
right.
whatever it was.
Well, I mean, Epica just did a whole
on Attack on Titan.
Yeah. So when you talked about Powerwolf covering or other bands covering Powerwolf on their last album, they had a bonus CD of them covering other bands, which I liked their covers
yeah.
much more than some of their songs. I mean, they covered Judas Priest,
Sabotage. Ozzy.
Amon Amarth, Iron Maiden, Black Sabbath.
The Sabotage cover was Edge of Thorns, I
yes.
believe. It was spectacular.
It was
and
great.
Then they did a great job on the Ozzy cover, too.
Shot in the Dark?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was fun, yeah. I like the inverse, how they did the inverse this time. Like, that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm applauding Powerwolf just for their creativity and their guts to do something like
that.
And
their imagery.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they're a fun band, and I'm glad they're as successful as they are and people love them so much.
Right.
I do wish they'd come here because I'd love to see them live, because then I can maybe get that kind of personal connection that I have with Sabaton, seeing them over and over again. I just, you know, let me see you live. Now, it's not that it's a proving
thing. I
think
they're getting there because like, there's some bands that are touring this year that I would – I never thought I was going to see them live here in the States, like Wolfheart and Karak Angren, however you say their name.
Yeah.
Like Morris Prince of EMS. That whole tour, I'm like, those three bands I never thought I'd ever see live.
It's going to be one heck of a show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Want to talk about the next band?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You ready to immortalize this band?
Well, they're already immortalized, you know.
We talked about we talked about this album a lot. I've listened to it once. I haven't gone back to it yet, so I know a couple tracks stand out here and there to me. But you said this is like your number one album.
No, I said that. I'm.
It's your favorite Immortal album of 2018.
Well, that's true. My feelings on the Immortal thing was when I first heard it, I kind of mistakenly just kind of said, oh, so they went back to their old style, but they kept the Peter Tatkin production.
Right, the modern production.
Production, because they actually had him on board doing, I think he played bass on this one in addition to, in addition to producing
it. I didn't know
that. And I mean, he's been their producer since At the Heart of Winter. He has been the guy with them to create that distinctive modern Immortal sound.
Right.
But, you know, with Abbath gone, you think that, well, the guitars will change probably, and maybe the song structures will change. And honestly, when I the first song, Northern Chaos Gods, when that comes out of the gate, it's so old school Immortal. You're like, yeah, they really went back to that old style. And then there's a couple moments throughout the album that make you think that way. But if you really give the album a lot of time and let it sink in, with a lot of repeat listens, what you realize is that they didn't really drift away that much from the Abbath style. Like, that sort of imprint, his DNA is all over this album, whether they want to admit it or not. I'm sure they'd be fine admitting it. He influenced them, and they have taken that influence of the Abbath years, and they've – because even this song, it has that mid-song drop-off where it comes back with that – you know, that kind of Abbathian – rock and roll.
And there's a lot of the acoustic guitar picking in the song.
Yeah. And just, I mean,
sonically, I agree. It still has a little bit of the old rawness to it, but sonically they're still trying things that they're not afraid to try new styles and new soundscapes, you know?
It just seems like, It seems like Demonaz thought, okay, because the story is that, you know, the Abbath album that came out a couple years ago was supposed to be, in fact, the next Immortal album, and Demonaz has gone on record on interviews saying that was the album we were writing. He took it with him when he left. You know, the thought was, do we litigate for this thing back, or do we just say, screw it, let him have it, and then start fresh,
right?
Which is what they decided to do. And I think
so. Who's the main songwriter now?
It's Demonaz.
It is.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He
all did lyrics and all music.
All music. Yeah.
Composed by Demonaz.
Like, this is his vision, and you know, I mean, he was writing. He was composing the riffs early in the band's career. Those first four records, and Abbath was playing bass, and he was handling drums for a while, I think. And then later, when Demonaz had the injury, he had to let that part go to Abbath because it made more sense because he was going to be singing anyway. So,
yeah.
To hear what he's, you know, because that Demonaz solo project came out in 2011, I wasn't that impressed with it. But to hear what he's doing here and now, I really think that he's tapped into that spirit of old Immortal, the best of old Immortal, those first four records, and the best of the Abbath era. And he's fused an amazing record. Well, I love this album.
I think he knew you have to sort of cater to what the fans expect and want, and he's definitely done that.
Yeah, but you know, you can argue that the fans had no idea what to expect, because All Shall Fall was in 2009. The last Abbath album was a dud. I mean, it was kind of like, when you go back and listen to that album, even at the time, it felt kind of off. And now, when you listen to it now, you're just like, man, that band really had problems. Like, that album just suffered from just a lack of interest from the band.
So what's the song we're going to get into?
Gates to Blashrik. Blashrik.
Sounds like a Star Wars planet.
I hope that's how you pronounce that.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Definitely sounds like a someplace that Han Solo would
something have that Hoth would be doing a record on. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So this is from the new album called Northern Chaos Gods, which I did not realize it was produced by Peter Tactron and he played bass on it. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah,
maybe they'll light the fire to do another Hypocrisy album.
Yeah, maybe. And
not another Pain. Okay. Going, whatever.
Yeah.
Not going there. All right, let's check out the something from the brand new Immortal. When did this come out? In July?
Yeah, like early July, I think. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. All right, well, let's check it out. Immortal.
We'll be right back.
And we have returned back to the show. We just got a little doomy.
Yeah.
There's a band called Wind Hand. They're an American doom metal band from Richmond, Virginia. So they're very sludgy, very doomy in style. But I get so many 90s grunge vibes from this band, vocally, lyrically, the way the melodies are. The dude totally sounds like Kurt Cobain in a lot of spots.
Yeah.
But it works. You don't think you're like, oh, yeah, grunge and doom. This works.
It does. Weirdly, my first thought was to go to, what's his name, Liam Gallagher from Oasis. Okay. But no, I hear the Kurt Cobain thing way more now. But
it's maybe more than just what Kurt Cobain. Maybe it was more of the not as known sub pop bands, yeah. You know, like not Screaming Trees, but there's a band.
Yeah. Mark Lanegan. Screaming Trees. Yeah.
There's something in my mind that I just can't pinpoint. I don't know. We were watching something going way off topic, and I didn't know Mark Lanegan had done so much stuff after Screaming Trees.
Oh yeah. He's like a indie darling star now. Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. Going back to this band, the new album, they've had three full length albums, a couple live albums. But this is from their, I guess, an upcoming album. It's just a Spotify single, just a single called Grey Garden. And the track we heard was called Grey Garden. Now, what did you think of these guys?
I liked it. Like, and you know, like everyone knows, that's normally not my thing. But lately, doom has been becoming more accessible to me. Mm-hmm. Started in 2017, it's really just kind of stayed that way. So I liked it. In fact, when after we had just listened to that song, we took a little break, and that was going through my – it was still running through my head. So that's a good sign. Yeah, I like it. Very
holy crap.
Very muddy.
Okay, so I had no idea, but in 2015, they got together with this producer. I don't know if you ever heard of him. His name is Jack Endino.
Oh, yeah. Famous rock producer.
He's only worked with Mudhoney, Soundgarden, Nirvana.
Bruce Dickinson, I believe.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's totally where... That's totally where they get that sound from, for sure. But it totally makes sense now.
Yeah. It's amazing how just certain people have, like...
Yeah, he worked with Skunkworks, didn't he?
Right, Skunkworks, yeah.
Speaking just of,
produce
we talked about...
that kind of sound, like, instantly, you know?
Yeah.
It's Peter Tatgren with Immortal. You know, yeah, so you want that crisp sound, you want that muddy sound, you go to Endino, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's that, so this is way off topic, but was it Mutt Lange? Is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
The producer? So people out there, you know me, I do not like Def Leppard at all. But that was a Hysteria album that he produced, overly poppy produced album.
He did Hysteria and Pyromania in 83. Yeah.
There was a Cars album that sound exactly alike. I can't think of what it is, but if you go back and listen to this one certain Cars album that had a lot of their, you know, big hits during the late 80s, you know, you're like, it's the same fucking album.
Huh.
Just a different singer and a different band.
And he was a producer.
He was a producer on those two.
Wow. You figured Rick Ocasek would have been handling the production.
But it's that, you know, you get a certain producer that have a sound and you can pinpoint. Like Arjen Lucassen has a certain sound. So any project that he works on, you can tell that he's produced that album.
Right, yeah.
Like you said, Peter Tatgren, he has a certain style to his production.
Right, yeah.
And I think that's good.
Yeah, I mean,
Eric Rutan definitely has a sound to his production style.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know how we went from Mutt Lange to Eric Rutan, but eclecticity, is that eclectic as fuck?
You know, the thing with Mutt Lange, though, like...
No, don't go back to him now.
No, I'm just saying, done. like he did an early Def Leppard album, too. There was, I think it might have been On Through the Night or...
Hmm.
No, High and Dry. He did High and Dry,
okay.
Which is still when they were kind of like, you know, rocking and stuff. And dude, that is a great sounding record, like good songs on that album.
That's when they were starting to
become more American rock. Like the first two Def Leppard albums are new wave of British heavy metal, but you know, I know Hysteria gets its fair share of flack, but as a sonic recording experiment, that thing is a masterpiece. Like just to listen to it and go, damn, they got these sounds in like 1987. Shit,
yeah,
that's impressive. You know,
I still won't give them credit.
There was no such thing as autotune then, and they made that album sound like that by having Joe Elliott go in the fucking studio and record over and over, and then the layer track after track, they like hundreds of vocal tracks. That's how they got that sound. Mm. Like now, you just turn on a filter and do it, but back then they did it on analog tape. You know, that's true. It's crazy. Yeah.
So back to Winehand. I really enjoy these guys. I need to listen to more of their full lengths. They're signed to Relapse Records now, so they're making a name for themselves.
So is this a full length album or is this just the single?
This is just upcoming single so far. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what are we going to do next? Oh, this is the sad part of the show, I guess.
Yeah, I just found out about this.
Yeah, I can't believe you didn't know. It's where he's like, okay, so we're going to – let's preface this. Randy Rampage, vocalist from DOA and three Annihilator albums, the first two albums, and then he came back in like the late 90s, I believe, to do an album.
Like 98, right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. His real name was Randall Desmond Archibald, better known as Randy Rampage. His death, I believe it was a heart attack, age 58. Yeah.
That sucks.
August 14th, 2018. And I love this album. I freaking adore Alice in Hell. It's one of my favorite
classic thrash
albums of all time.
Yeah.
It's an amazing album.
I would say that if you had a top 10 of thrash albums of all time, this could arguably be in the top 10.
Art, like, definitely.
Of all time thrash albums, you know.
Are we going to go there now?
No. We'll just say that this one belongs.
I like Never Neverland too, but Alice in Hell, yeah, I mean.
That's sad.
We should do our top 10 thrash albums of all time.
We should do an episode devoted to it.
Yeah.
We'll work on that, yeah.
Okay. If you guys have ideas, not to take away from anything right now, but if you have an idea for an episode topic, msrcast@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us on Twitter at msrcast and at the Metal Pigeon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But so Randy Rampage, vocalist on the first two Annihilator albums, Alice in Hell, Never Neverland, and it was a Criteria for Black Window.
I don't think I really ever listened to that one that much. All I know is that he was the best.
Yeah.
He was
Criteria for a Black Widow.
The best vocalist that they had, in my opinion. That being said, I really loved Aaron Randall on Set the World Afire.
Mm-hmm.
Like I have a soft spot for that record because that was the first Annihilator album I ever got.
Okay.
But
mine was actually Never Neverland.
But those two albums are amazing.
I like what's the guy's name? I can't think of his – Jeff Waters. I actually like his vocal style.
Oh, yeah. He's good.
I mean, he's not the best vocalist, but he fits what they're doing now.
Yeah.
Doesn't really hit some of those old songs very well, but whatever.
Yeah, no.
When they're doing stuff live, but, you know, he wants to sing for his own band. He can do whatever the hell he wants. It's his band.
Yeah.
I'm not arguing with him. But, yeah. So we're going to get into paying a little tribute to Randy Rampage. I was thinking about doing something from DOA, but I'm not really I don't really know that much about him.
Yeah.
I know he did like a couple albums with him, and then he came back in the late 2000s. I know when they did another album, but let's do Alice in Hell, the title track.
Yeah.
From Alice in Hell. Well, it's not really a title track because it's Alice in Hell.
Alice.
And then the album is Alice in Hell.
Yeah.
Very confusing. But rest in peace, our friend. Let your vocals carry on forever.
What a bummer.
Mm-hmm. Alice,
Well, welcome back. Episode 210 of MSR Cast, and that was appropriately titled Sorrow.
Yeah.
From the album Static by Huntress. And obviously, you know, we're all aware of what happened a couple of days ago with the news about Jill Janis. They say age 43, apparent suicide.
Yeah.
And
it's sad.
Yeah.
If you, I've never really been I've heard about these guys. They've been on my radar, but I've never really sought them out until I've heard songs here and there, but I didn't really pay attention to their music until she passed, and I listened to it some more. They're actually a really good band, talented group of musicians. She, phenomenal singer. Like, she's a great rock singer.
Yeah.
Amazing, amazing vocalist. Apparently super, super nice and everything. And
yeah, that was what everyone was saying. Yeah, I mean, I had paid attention to them. I'd listened to their stuff, and I'd always felt they were good. It's weird. When the last Unleash the Archers album came out,
yeah,
I kind of felt like that album was everything I wanted Huntress to be.
Sure.
Like Sonic. Yeah. Not to put Huntress down or anything.
Because Huntress is a little bit more...
Just straight ahead.
Straight ahead rock at points. But it was great musicianship.
Yeah.
So you did mention that it was an apparent suicide. Not really confirmed yet.
Yeah, I guess.
We've lost a lot of people to suicide this year, in the past couple of years. And it just goes to show that, you know, fame, fortune, all those type of things... If you have a problem, seek help. Call the National Suicide Hotline. It's actually 1-800-273-8255. You can find them online. Reach out to your friend if you have a problem. But just reach out. Get some help. I know it can be hard and difficult. And, you know, depression, it's a real disease. People suffer from it, and... It does take lives. So,
I mean, because the eerie thing about this, you know, situation is that you go and I went back and I looked at her social media, her Instagram and her Twitter.
Oh, did you?
And she was talking about like things she's going to be doing and stuff. And
yeah,
like, oh, you know, we're looking forward to this upcoming thing and we're printing more of this. And it's just like, you know, normal band talk and stuff. And so it just kind of out of nowhere.
Blindsided. It is the same thing with like Anthony Bourdain. You know, he's
right
in the middle of filming a season of a show, and he that's what happened to him.
Yeah.
It's just like you never. Chris Cornell, and what's the guy from Linkin Park? I can't think of his name.
Oh, Chester. Somebody? Well, yeah, who had like the video footage of him laughing.
I saw that. Laughing
time.
With his kid, and yeah. They're eating those. They're eating the weird jelly bean flavor that you don't know what you're going to get. You know you're going to get dirty diapers or marshmallow or whatever it was.
Right, yeah.
Having a great the day before he, you know, took his life. It's sad. I know life is hard for a lot of people out there. It's just try to reach out and get some help.
Yeah.
Find something that I know it's hard, but try to find something that makes you happy, you know?
Yeah.
Be it metal, be it whatever it is.
I was just like, you know, mentioning the Instagram and stuff. Like, if that kind of shit like is like bumming you out, like when you look at Instagram, because sometimes I've read things about this, how like that could I could totally see how it is, because people edit their lives to make it look like it's better than it is on Instagram.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
They're not giving you Instagram stories of them doing laundry on a boring Sunday afternoon.
I do that,
right?
No, I don't.
So, I mean, just like, you know, if that stuff is bumming you out, just delete the app off your phone, for God's sake, for a little bit or something, you know?
Yeah. Got social media. So reach out, get help, call the suicide hotline, go to the website, reach out to your friend, whatever you got to do. Everybody, mental health is important, and I don't know what else to say. I really don't.
Yeah, I mean, genre doesn't matter. It's just the fact that this is going through this in music. This is happening all over. It's very disturbing.
And not just music, but, you know, in celebritydom completely.
Yeah.
It's just these people were just starting to hear about it more in, I think it might have been something that's been brushed under the rug for a while. You know what I mean?
Then maybe it's not actually disclosed. I think that's probably true. Yeah.
You don't know? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just something that's been more prevalent in the past 10 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
With celebrity and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, sad. Huntress is definitely had a bright future in front of them.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Bright they had to wear shades.
There you go.
It's true. So do you want to move on to something a little bit more happy?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So when I first started listening to Huntress, the first thing that came to my mind was her vocals, the scratchy harshness, not harshness, but the what's the, I'm trying to think of the adjective. Yeah. She reminds me of Doro.
Yeah.
Jill Janis definitely, or the Janis or Janis?
Janis. Yeah.
Definitely had Doro-esque quality to her voice. And the next band we're going to play sounds just like Doro. Wait a minute. It is Doro. This is your pick, so I'll let you talk about it.
Doro is back with a double album, which, you know, look, I mean...
Isn't that too much?
Doro doesn't need to do a double album, I'll just say that. I mean, look, Doro's solo work has been interesting because she's released some great songs through her solo career. And...
well, even with starting with Warlock, yeah, for sure.
Well, the Warlock records, I think, are classics. Mm-hmm. I mean, Warlock, if you've never gone and listened to, like... some of those classic Warlock records, you need to.
One of the most iconic arena rock songs, All We Are. It's still a great song.
Yeah, that's one of the best songs ever. She's such a underrated role or figure in metal history, I think, because people now point to, you know, like Angela Gossow and the Alyssa White Glues, and they look to Tarja Turunen and all these, you know, people from the 2000 onward era.
Sure.
But you don't ever really get a lot of stuff in modern mainstream media writing about
Doro, Lita Ford,
the originators of that kind of thing back in the day. And Doro's been doing this nonstop. She has never stopped making, you know, albums and playing shows and stuff. And yeah, she doesn't really tour the States or anything. She's huge in Germany and Europe and stuff like that. But I've always had that respect for her, even though I can't say that all her albums are just, you know, excellent. She has fun songs. Like the best Doro albums to listen to are her live records, because it's just a compilation of great Warlock cuts and then the best of her Doro stuff. And you get that live atmosphere, because that's kind of what she is. She's just kind of like a party metal, you know, spirit of metal, old school, like songs about metal, about being metal and the metal culture. And it's a real old school mentality. And if you, you know, look at the cover of this new album, it's just Doro with a bunch of metal fans around her. So I like this song, though, on this album. And appropriately, after our last segment, this song is called Lift Me Up. It is a... white snake-ish, kind of smoky, scorpions-ish, mid-80s period ballad. It has that vibe to it, and I think that her vocals are great. I think the song is really, really good, really strong, and it's understated in a way that Doro is normally not understated, which has made it stand out to me. So,
this is another... we're going to just agree to disagree.
It's fine.
I mean, it's a fine song and everything, but...
Just think about mid-80s.
Yeah, well, definitely. It's just a lot of – it repeats the same thing over and over and over, and that gets to my nerves.
Fair.
Yeah. At least it's not the song she did with Johan from Amon Amarth.
It was bad.
The duet she does, oh, my God, it's so freakingly bad. Because she was on the last Amon Amarth album.
Yeah.
And that worked.
That worked, yeah.
But with – okay, you can't do a love duet with Johan's vocal style.
Yeah.
It doesn't
work. You got to lean heavy. And the thing is, like, Doro has had moments on her solo record, her solo career, where she's gone more thrashy, because she has the original guitarist from Triumph, from Warlock playing with her. And it is, when she gets thrashy and dirty, it sounds really good. And I wish she would do more of that, but she's she likes her kind of arena metal type stuff. So that's, you know, fair. But I will say, if, speaking of heaviness, on Warlock, the song I Rule the Ruins is one of the dirtiest, heaviest, thrashiest songs of that era. And it never gets the credit it deserves. So go back and listen to that one. That is a classic Warlock cut, too. So, yeah. Want to get into it?
Let's do it. I'm surprised you didn't pick one of the songs that has metal in the title, because there's quite a few on this album.
I want it to be different. I want it to stand out.
We should revisit that, because we've done that a long time ago. I think before you were involved. Okay. We did an episode where we only played songs that either referenced metal, had metal in the title, that type of thing.
It's like a lot of speed metal then? Like Exciter and stuff?
Well, no. It was more, you know, like this, you know, we're all metal. And
right, yeah.
We could definitely revisit that again as a specialty episode.
All right.
Let's get into the new Doro. This is, what's the album? Forever Warriors, Forever United.
Yep.
It's not cheesy at all.
I'll let it pass.
I can tell you I've been chained forever. Only in my dreams I can be free and feel much better. I'd be running right into your arms, away from the dark.
Do not fear.
Back to the show, my friends. So we just did a sort of 80s retro new set there. So Michael Schenkerfest, if you don't know who Michael Schenker is, what are you doing? Go listen to more of him.
You know who Mike, everyone knows who he is.
You know old Mike. But yeah, this is a new album he put out, Michael Schenkerfest. So it's just a bunch of people that he's worked with him before, friends and all that kind of stuff. So the song that I picked is called Heart and Soul, and it features Robin McAuley and Kirk Hammett on guitar solo, I guess, somewhere. That's cool. In that song. Yeah. You know, MSG, he's worked with Robin McAuley before. I think that, I mean, it's people know it, but it's still sort of underrated, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're not a fan of this type of music, the Michael Schenker, McAuley Schenker group, I'm sorry. But I sort of picked this song because I recently took a trip to Vegas, right? The only thing we had planned was to go see the Beatles Love, and we were trying to find something else to do while we're there, another show or something like that. And there's a show called Raiding the Rock Vault. Have you heard about this?
No, but Vegas has a lot of these themed shows going on all the time, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is at the Hard Rock Cafe, and I'm going to pull up the band that actually performed. I was hoping it would be more heavier style songs, but a lot of the songs they played, they did stuff from the 60s all the way to modern stuff, and it was more, they did like the Doors and like Led Zeppelin and that type of stuff, which is fine. So the band, when I saw them, at the end of the show, they actually went out there. They had tables set up in the casino area, and you could go through and meet them and stuff. So this guy, Howard Leese, on guitar. Robin McAuley was one of the vocalists. Paul Shortino was one of the other vocalists that night. And Andrew Freeman was the other vocalist. Andrew Freeman is from Last in Line, which is like the Dio members' new band after.
Oh, yeah.
And he was great. He was like a phenomenal vocalist. Blas Elias was the drummer.
Oh, wow.
I'm trying to see who played that night, because they do, like, depends on when they're touring with their other bands and stuff like that.
Right.
Rowan Robertson was a guitar player. He's also in Sin City Sinners. Who we saw that week two, and it turns out Oz Fox, a guitar player from Sin City Sinners and Striper,
yeah,
collapsed on stage like the week after we saw them in Vegas, and he's been in the hospital ever since.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's been crazy. I'm trying to find this other guy's name. He's the guitar player from the band Hell Yeah. So he was the last guy in line. So we got to him. We actually, you know, we were like, we wanted to give our condolences. We were a big fan of Vinny. So yeah, we gave condolences to about Vinny Paul. And we talked to him about it for a few minutes. He's a really nice guy. Didn't tell him, I don't really like your band, but you know, I'm not a big fan of Hell Yeah, but whatever.
Yeah, he doesn't need to know that.
He doesn't need to know that. We did. One of the guys, the keyboardist, I was wearing my Metal Geek shirt, right? And he's like, what is Metal Geeks? And I sort of explained to him, like, yeah, we're a metal, geeky metal podcast out of Houston. He's like, Houston? He's like, this dude pointed to Blas Elias next to him. He's from Houston originally. And then, like, we started talking to Blas Elias about Houston for, like, a few minutes.
Oh, yeah?
He's like, the first thing, he's like, my favorite restaurants are this and that. We're like, all right, yeah, those are good.
Yeah.
It was very interesting. Yeah. I had no idea that the guy was a local guy originally, you know?
I had no idea either.
Yeah, it was a fun show. We bought Groupons for it, so it wasn't as expensive as it could have been, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, and I like how they have these kind of things set up for, like, a lot of these guys, like, as a side gig to do, you know, like, in Vegas. Like, it makes sense. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I used to be so anti. The only tribute things I ever saw back in the day were, like, I went to go see, remember when they had the Four Horsemen, the Metallica tribute? I went to see them once, and then I saw Appetite for Destruction once.
Okay.
And that was pretty much it.
So Raiding the Rock Vault, it's moved around from place to place. It's a Hard Rock hotel now. And it really fits there, but it's not a super polished, you know, Vegas-y show. They did have a couple girls that came on stage and danced around, but it's just a fun sort of rock show.
Rock tribute.
I'm trying to say this in the nicest way possible. It's a rock tribute show for people that go to Vegas. You know what I'm saying?
People probably don't go out to rock shows.
People that don't go to rock shows that often, they never been to a heavy metal show.
Yeah.
They would not know who Robin McAuley is or Paul Shortino or any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And they're going to see, oh, they're playing Led Zeppelin, they're playing The Doors, and there was a video screen, everything sort of fit together. They did Queen, they did everything you would expect them to do.
It all sounded pretty good.
And it all sounded fine. It was perfectly serviceable.
Mm-hmm.
Not really in your face, but, you know, sweetened up a little bit for that audience.
Right, yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with that. It served its place. We had a good time. We had fun. That's all that mattered.
Yeah.
If there was another heavy metal show going on that weekend we were there, I would have definitely gone to it.
You know, it's funny for that Maiden tribute, when I was looking around at the crowd, like, who would be here? It was a packed show, first of all. Like, and it was a Saturday night, so yeah, it was kind of like that Saturday night crowd of, like, you know, drinking, like, you know, have a table here and sit down with our pitcher of Bud Light. And it was a lot of people who you wouldn't normally see at, like, metal shows, but they went because they wanted to hear the Maiden classics, you know? And yeah, you get that kind of tribute bands draw a weird crowd, it seems like. It's just like a very casual audience, you know?
Yeah.
And then you had some diehard Maiden fans up front who are going crazy, but
that's good.
Yeah.
They're fun.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah. I used to have a thing about, like, maybe being anti that, like, no, go see real bands, but they are real bands. It's just a different type of experience, so.
Yeah. We're going to be seeing plenty of real bands coming up in the next few months.
Yeah, no shortage of that.
No shortage. And it's trying to figure out who I am going to go see.
Yeah.
This coming up weekend in Houston at the Scout Bar, it's the last Dead Horse show ever. This is the band that I grew up on, man. I started going to Dead Horse shows, like, in 1989, 1990.
Yeah, wow.
Not supposed to be going to some of them, but I went. First time I ever did a stage dive was at a Dead Horse show. The last time I ever did a stage dive was at that Dead Horse show. did plenty of moshing. It's like, you know, you when you're freaking 17, 18, watching them. But I love Dead Horse. Unfortunately, you know, Mike Hogg is no longer in the band, but they decided this is it for them. They're going to call it quits, and they're doing their last show ever. And there's like five or six bands playing that night, and it's all bands that members of Dead Horse are currently in.
Hmm.
So Pasadena Napalm Division, if you don't know who they are, it's a member of the Dead Horse and Kurt Brecht from DRI. That's their band. And just Baron von Bombast is playing, which is a local band. I don't even remember who's in what band.
Right.
So it's going to be a fun night. I'm sure it's going to be a pretty hectic, raucous night for a lot of people that night.
Oh yeah, I bet that'll be packed up.
Yeah, it'll be packed in the Scout Bar. So I'm looking forward to that. What's the next show you're looking forward to, like really looking forward to?
Unleash the Archers on September 19th, I think. Yeah.
I was looking at my schedule, and that might be one I might skip. I don't know. Depends.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. But Stryker's also on the bill. So, yeah. I can't remember if I saw Stryker before or not, but I definitely want to see him again if I have.
Stryker, barely even knew her.
I bought a ticket to the Stephen Wilson show in December.
Oh, yeah.
So just get that squared away.
Because I missed Porcupine Tree when they came last time.
I saw them, which was the last time they ever came here, was in 05.
It wasn't that long ago, was it?
Yeah, they didn't come on the other tour. I was waiting for them, and they skipped Texas altogether.
Oh, my God.
So 05 on the Dead Wing tour, and I saw them at the engine room, and I met Stephen Wilson outside.
No, they played a House of Blues one time, didn't they? Maybe it was Stephen Wilson that played there?
He did.
Okay.
And I missed that. But Porcupine Tree only came in 05.
I was at that show.
The interesting story about that Porcupine Tree show, that engine room, me and this other guy got there so early back in the days when I would do this. Get there so early that we got, like, one of the roadies was like, hey, you can come and see soundcheck if you want to. So we stood there in the back in the dark by the mixing desk watching Stephen Wilson and Porcupine Tree soundcheck like three songs. And they never saw us. We were just shrouded in the darkness. And afterwards, we kind of went back outside and just geeking out on that. And
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Most time now you have to pay for that feature.
Yeah.
You have to pay to get into a sound check now.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to the Amorphis tour.
Yeah, I am. Despite all, despite how the album went for me, I just want to see that band again because they were such a great live experience.
I definitely disagree with you there.
Yeah. No, I know.
Album of the year.
And I also want to see who else was with them. Was it?
It's Moonspell.
Omnium
Gathering.
I can't wait to see Omnium
and
again.
Dark Tranquility, which I've seen Dark Tranquility a few times here and there.
Yeah.
Which is, they're fine.
Yeah.
They're fun. They're a great live band. But Omnium Gathering, I'm really looking forward to. And then last time I saw Moonspell was on the Blackest of the Black tour. When it was Danzig and Demi Borgir, Moonspell. I can't remember what other bands are on that tour.
I saw them open for Opeth a long, long time ago, like 2002 or something.
I saw them at the, remember the San Antonio Metal Fest? And the singer was so drunk, he was like falling off the stage.
Yeah. Not a good time for old Moonspell there.
No, that was back in 99?
Yeah.
I'm trying to pull up that Blackest of the Black tour. It was the House of Blues. And I remember Danzig was horrible sounding. It really was.
Did Demu sound good at least?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Good. Yeah, don't come on stage so drunk you can't stand. I don't think I've ever really seen that.
They apparently did a tour last year. Like, did a show in California. Blackest of the Black.
I did see a show where I was pretty convinced that the lead singer was on some serious narcotics.
Really?
Yeah. Buck Cherry a long time ago. But then again, he did have a song with the whole, I love the cocaine. So I'm, he was just such a spaz on stage. It's like, yeah, I've never seen a show where someone's just so drunk they're falling over, though. Because I think that would really piss me off. I think that would remember that,
Right. Let's see. Here it was. It was Danzig, Demi Borgir, Moonspell, Winds of Plague, and Skeleton Witch.
Wow.
Yeah. Remember Winds of Plague was okay.
Yeah.
But Skeleton Witch are great.
Yeah.
It was October 28th. It was at the House of Blues in 2008.
Wow.
Shit, that's 10 years ago already.
Yeah. Yeah.
Way to make me feel old. Wow. So it's been 10 years since I've seen Moonspell. Okay. There you go. Probably 10 years since I've seen Demi Borgir as well, then.
Yeah.
It feels like the last time they came, maybe. I know they did the tour with Enslaved. When was that? That must have been after that.
Yeah, that was after that.
Okay, that's the last time I've seen him.
Yeah, that's right.
Because that was on that Abracadabra album.
Right, yeah.
Which was
2011?
Yeah.
2010. Right, 2010, yeah. Yeah, I missed that one.
All right, so we talked about Michael Schenkerfest. We talked about Doro. And we're going to play a classic track to end off the episode. But before we do that, we got some house cleaning to do. So let's talk about where people can find us on all over the internet. You ready for that?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So first of all, you can find us at our website at msrcast.com. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at MSRcast, and our sister show, the Metal Geeks Podcast, all at Metal Geeks. MetalGeeks.net will also get you to the same place, MSRcast.com. If you have a request or you have a complaint or a topic idea, whatever you have, MSRcast@gmail.com.
Find me at www.themetalpigeon.com for the site. And themetalpigeon.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, for social medias.
And if you're looking for a place to listen to us, we have multiple places for that now. We're on good old iTunes. Find us there. Both shows are on the same feed. Like us, subscribe, and leave a review for us. It'd be fun. Tell your friends. You can also find us on platforms like Stitcher. And some small platform called Spotify that I listen to every day of my life.
Yep.
I'm still stoked to be on Spotify. It's super cool.
And it makes it easy. Yeah.
Yep. And that's about it. Thanks for keeping it metal with us for so many years. And we're going to be back very, very soon because there's a lot of new music coming out very, very, very soon. And we want to talk about it.
Yeah, the release schedule for the rest of this month and September is getting daunting, yep. So next episode will be busy.
Yes. So let's talk about our last song of the evening.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the first two Yngwie albums need to get reappraised as being the classics that they
are. How do you say it?
Yngwie.
That's how I've always heard
Yngwie.
It.
Yngwie, yeah.
But you could be right.
No, I think you're right, but I can't change that now. It's too late.
It's inscribed in your brain.
But this is, I'll See the Light Tonight from Marching Out. If any of you guys watched Lock Horns, when they did the, Martin Popoff guest,
it's actually Yngwie.
Yngwie.
No, just Yngwie. I-N-V-E-I. That's how you pronounce it. Yngwie.
Yngwie. Okay.
No, you're saying the G. There's no G. You don't Yngwie. Pronounce the G apparently.
Yngwie.
Yngwie.
Oh, fuck him.
Right?
But if you saw they Lockhorns did an episode. It was a while ago, but it was for the essential power metal albums of all time, and Marching Out for was one of the albums they picked that Martin Popoff picked, and I think he's dead on with that as far as being a groundbreaking release that kind of helped develop power metal and helped influence the bands down the line, and I think it gets overlooked sometimes, but I'm glad it didn't there. This song with Jeff Scott Soto on vocals, back when he was a young whippersnapper, this is such an amazing record, and this song is like the iconic song from that record. So,
and Yngwie's worked with some amazing vocalists in his career. I mean, off the top of my head, Mark Bowles, some guy named Ripper Owens recently.
Yeah,
Jeff Scott Soto.
He's got a good body of work. Yeah, he has released some really just flabby, awful records, you know?
Sure.
Like, especially in the last 15 years. But if go back to those first three solo records of his, those were classic records, I think, you know? And, you know, it's not so much shreddy. He had, like, the vocalists on there. He had good songwriting on there, and it was good stuff.
Very cool. So, you mentioned really quickly the Lockhorns. Did you watch the series they did called the Shredder?
Yeah, I watched that one. The first one, I guess, or the only one maybe right now.
Well, no, they finished the whole series.
Okay. Maybe I just watched the recent one.
They did it really
one.
Quickly.
Yeah.
I thought it was really, really good.
Yeah, yeah. Episode I saw was great.
It was fun.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for a metalized version of like The Voice or something like that. What was it called? It was called, I can't think of the name of it now.
Just Shredders, right?
Is it Shredders?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
I think so.
It's you can find it on YouTube through the what's her
Banger TV channel.
Yeah. So
you should be subscribed to that channel.
I definitely recommend checking it out because it was a lot of fun.
I know,
and Alex Skolnick was one of the judges, which is really cool.
Yeah. I know Lockhorns is like a very dense a very conversation heavy show. I like it. It's my kind of thing. It's such a, for a nerd like me, it's such a heavenly show. Yeah. So, yep.
On that note, Yngwie Malmsteen, I'll See the Light Tonight from the album Marching Out. And one last thing we got to say.
Keep it metal.
Indeed. Thank you, guys.
Keep it Malmsteen.
Ooh. Keep it Yngwie.
Droids. Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.